It all came down to player safety.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We're going to talk about the games from Wednesday, including one that didn't get played. We're going to talk about the games for Thursday. We're going to shine that player spotlight on Bradley Beal of the Washington Wizards and discuss a trade that went down today. So,
Let's get to it indeed.
We will start off proceedings by looking at the aforementioned trade. Billy Hernangómez of the New York Knicks moves in exchange for Johnny O'Brien of the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets will also send two future second round draft choices to the Knicks. Yesterday I was talking about many people going on about Hernangómez, how he was going to get this huge run now that Porzingis was out. It turns out there's a couple of things that, A, that's clearly not going to happen in New York, but nobody really values him that high. The Knicks have been trying to trade him allegedly all season. This was the best that they could do. Johnny O'Brien, who they're going to waive in two second round draft choices. I feel like Hernangómez, Billy Hernangómez, is the only European player that people significantly overrate his talent. So often it's with the European guys, oh, he's soft, he's a Euro, he's going to bust. Everybody seems to just love this guy and think he's some sort of superstar in the making. I like Hernangómez. I think he's a solid center. I don't think he's as good as what so many people seem to make out. He goes from being the third string center in New York to being the third string center in Charlotte behind Dwight Howard and Cody Zeller. There's also Frank the Tank Kaminsky, who can play some minutes at center there in Charlotte as well. Now, of course, that could all change tomorrow if there was a rumored deal of Dwight Howard going to the Cavs. I think that that's pretty unlikely. Or if Cody Zeller ends up getting moved somewhere, then Hernangómez could move into a backup role. But like the situation he was in New York, he needs two guys to move or to get hurt in order for him to become a starter and play 27 to 28 minutes. And that sort of scenario seems unlikely. If you believe the report of Dwight Howard and Kemba Walker going to Charlotte in exchange for Isaiah Thomas and Tristan Thompson or whatever other bullshit was included in that deal, maybe the Brooklyn pick as well, whatever that rumor was, then maybe you stash Bill. But Cody Zeller's a better player than Hernangómez, and he would likely start and play 26 or 27, and Hernangómez gets 21 or 22, and that's probably not enough in most situations. Again, the Knicks have been trying to trade this guy all season from reports from the Knicks beat writers, and nobody offered more than Johnny O'Brien and two second round draft choices. Much like yesterday with Kylo Quinn's injury, and this happens quite a bit, and I try not push back on it, but try and just give some perspective, because people really love getting excited about stuff. Man, Kylo Quinn must own now. Well, literally nothing changes for Kylo Quinn in this situation. Billy Hernangómez wasn't playing. Johnny O'Brien's got waived, that's fine. But he wasn't playing. So there's no extra minutes there from Hernangómez not playing that go to O'Quinn. Yeah, Kyle will absorb all zero of Billy's playing time. And you could say, oh, there's no Porzingis there as well. But when Porzingis was out earlier in the season, we didn't see Kyle all of a sudden playing 26 minutes. We didn't see Willie get into the rotation at all in that time frame. We saw Lance Thomas, Doug McDermott, and Michael Beasley play at the four. With Damian Dotson taking up some minutes on the wings, Courtney Lee there, of course, but we didn't see, you know, massive Cock canter front courts with Hernangómez playing the backup. It happened a little bit in maybe one or two games. That's really it. So yes, they've lost Hernangómez. Yes, they've lost Porzingis, but Hernangómez wasn't playing and Kylo Quinn wasn't ever playing the four. So literally Cantor and Kylo Quinn remain and they stay in the exact same roles that they were in. Maybe the 2 or 3 minutes per game that Kristaps was playing at center, now they have to go to either Cantor or O'Quinn. Maybe you get 2 extra minutes there to Ennis. Maybe you get an extra minute to Kylo Quinn. But it doesn't all of a sudden mean that he's playing 27 minutes a night. I could be completely wrong. I could be completely off base with that. But based on what we have seen with the way the rotations have run, with the way that things have happened earlier when Porzingis was out, nothing has happened. Hernangómez was playing 0 minutes per game. So Kylo Quinn doesn't get a boost from Billy not being there. It might solidify his value, meaning they're not going to switch him out, or they're unlikely to trade him now, or they're not going to all of a sudden start Billy over Enes Kanter. Maybe in your mind that might solidify that. But it's not changing anything in terms of the day-to-day rotation of the Knicks. As for the Hornets, again, many people have told me, oh, he's so much better than Cody Zeller. I completely 100% disagree on that. I think Cody Zeller is probably the best backup center in the NBA. Maybe there's someone else that I'm missing there. Maybe it's Gorgui Dieng. Cody Zeller is back from that knee injury, but he looks fine. He is the backup center. Hernan Gomez is the third stringer. Yeah, they are a team who is devoid in young talent, so getting a guy like Billy and seeing what he can do. Zeller and Howard haven't been the most durable players throughout their careers, so some opportunities are going to arise. But he's not going to come in and A, take all of Cody Zeller's minutes, and B, he's not going to come in and then take minutes away from Dwight Howard and say, sorry, Dwight, you're playing 32 a night, but now Bill's here, so you're going to be down to 26, and Bill's going to play his 22, and Cody are out of the rotation. I also saw someone laughably suggest, it's all right now, Bob, Hernan Gomez is going to start at the four. Don't worry about Marvin Williams. That is just a ludicrous decision. Sometimes people just get really blinded by moves that happen and think it's going to be this huge, massive change, and a player that they like is just getting this increase in value. He's not valued very highly across the NBA. I think it's probably a misrepresentation of what the other GMs, not misrepresentation, a misevaluation from the other GMs. I think he's good. I think he can be solid. But people are thinking like, this is a guy who's a top 10 center in the NBA and he just needs to play. And why is he being stiffed? Much like the Jahlil Okafor stuff. Oh, he's been just absolutely destroyed by the franchise. Okafor wasn't good enough to play in Philadelphia. And you could comfortably make the argument that Hernan Gomez isn't good enough here in New York, or wasn't good enough, and probably won't be good enough in Charlotte to crack that rotation ahead of the guys who are ahead of him. So I'm not getting overly excited here about Bill. Stuff can change. Howard could get traded. Cody Zeller could get traded. Plenty of different things could actually change. But at this point, where we're currently standing, not a lot's really happening with this deal. While we're talking trades, a reminder that tomorrow there will be a live trade deadline show. Myself, Greg Ehrenberg from Basketball Monster, we're going to be going live on Periscope at around 2 p.m. Eastern time. For those of you in Australia, that's 6 a.m. Melbourne time, so set your alarms, get up early, while myself and Greg break down any trades that have happened before that and whatever happens in that hour, 15 minutes leading up to the trade deadline. When trades are consummated, we'll obviously have our reactions. Matt Smith's going to be doing a chat over on Basketball Monster. Kyle's going to be over there updating stuff over on the site as well. What I'm also going to be trying to do when trades go down is get the respective Locked On podcast host for that team to come on and just give us a couple of minutes thoughts on what they think of the trade and how the rotation would work and what sort of information they've heard about how players might be used. So we're going to have guys calling in and out throughout the show, giving some perspective on what is actually happening with that deal and how that can be impactful for fantasy. So make sure you've got some waiver wire acquisitions left and make sure you are tuned in and ready to go for the trade deadline program. I don't know if I mentioned it. It's on Periscope. I'm on Periscope at @redrock_bball, the same as my Twitter handle. The monstrous line of the night.
LeBron James.
37, 10 and 15, 5 triples, 1 steal, 1 block, a game winner, 16 of 22 from the field. He missed both of his free throws, but still, that's a fantastic performance from LeBron. Yes, he hasn't been quite himself recently, and a large part due to his free throw shooting, which has been terrible, 64% over the last month, but he's the third ranked player for the year, averaging 26.5 points, 8 rebounds and 8.7 assists. His numbers are eerily similar to last season, except he is shooting 7% better from the line, and he is getting you an extra 33% on his steals, 1.2 up to 1.6, and an additional 60% on his blocks from 60% up to, from 0.6 up to 1. So really increased his value there. A lot of people really steer clear of LeBron. I don't want him. He's going to rest. I don't think there's going to necessarily be huge rests for LeBron here down the stretch. We know how badly the Cavs have been struggling. It's going to be interesting to see how they go. But he has been strong. The free throws is probably the only issue that's creeping up for LeBron at the moment after they had been such a strength to begin the season. Let's go to the waiver wire line of the night. It is the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 34-2, 6 triples with a block, 13 of 22 from the field and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Crabbe has been piss poor this season. He is not a good fantasy player. I've said this about him many times. He can hit threes and he's hit them at an elevated rate this year, up from 1.7 to 2.4 this season. But his efficiency, which is the real strength that he brought before this season, has completely dropped off. It's nowhere to be seen. Look at this as a good performance from Crabbe, clearly, but I'm not looking at it and going, he is going to be a must-own guy. His values are always inflated if you look at 9 category ranks because of how low his turnovers are. But the only positive categories he's got for the season are his three-pointers, where he's at 2.4, and his free throws, which are at 85%, but on minimal attempts, so they're hardly a real swinger. In that category, a lot of his stuff has dropped off. It was not a guy I was super interested in at all. At the beginning of the season, you would have heard me talk about Alan Crabbe quite a bit. I don't really rate him as a player. I think his defense is overrated. I think what he can do offensively is extraordinarily limited, and his role is best as a 20-minute Kyle Korver on the Cavs type of a player who just spots up and takes threes, not in that elevated role he's got in Brooklyn or even the elevated role he had last season in Portland. The young gun of the night, it is the Blue Swimmers teammate, Jarrett Allen of the Brooklyn Nets. 13, 14, and 6 for Allen with a steal, 2 blocks. He was 5 of 11 from the field and hit all 3 of his free throws. Over the last 2 weeks, he is the 55th ranked player, playing only 24 minutes a night, 14 and 7 with 0.6 steals and 0.9 blocks on a massive 69% shooting.
Giggity!
And 91% from the line. It should be obvious to you. It is a clear must-own situation here for Allen. He was a guy at the start of the year. We said, maybe take a flyer on him at the end of your draft and see what happens, see how they use him. Obviously, you wouldn't have been able to hold him from the beginning of the year because he didn't play for big stretches and he was limited. But now he has scored in double digits in 9 consecutive games. He's had double-digit rebounding in 3 of those. He's had a couple of 2-block performances in there, and he has been at over 50% in 8 of those 9 games, with today's one being the only one where he was under 50%. The minutes aren't going away, I don't think, anywhere. He's going to still be putting up 24 to 25 minutes a night minimum and can go above that. He is as must-own as it gets. He should be. If you've got Greg Monroe and Jarrett Allen's on your wire, that is as no-brainer as it gets. Marquise Chris, again, another no-brainer decision. Send me your question as to who do I drop for Jarrett Allen. The answer is going to be there's going to be lots of guys that you can drop to go and get him. He is a must-own player. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. That's the wrong graphic. Oh, yeah, I forgot. My graphic didn't work today for Donovan Mitchell. The Don was not ideal in this game. He had only 9 points in 31 minutes, 3 rebounds, 1 3, and a block on 4 of 12 shooting. It's been a little bit of a tough stretch for Don over the last couple of performances, or the last 2 games, especially. Prior to that, he was good. He's still been awesome this season. We know how good he has been, but this is just a little bit of a blip, nothing to really worry about too much for Don Mitchell. So don't get too panicked about it, I think would be my advice to you with him. I still don't think he's the rookie of the year. Many of you will disagree. I would much prefer Simmons in that spot. I don't know if there's any Australian bias in there. Maybe there is. I love Don Mitchell. This was a poor performance. And he'll be fine. No need to be too concerned. I do like his upside, as I've mentioned before. I think he does have at some point top 10 fantasy upside, which of course would be spectacular for your dynasty team if you did happen to take a flyer on him this season. All right, let's go on to question time now. And today's question comes from Fletcher Keel, and his Twitter handle is at Fletch Topper. He says, how can cricket work in America? I don't know that it can, Fletch. I know that Americans have sports that go for a long time. A football game goes for 4 hours. A baseball game's going for 3.5 to 4 hours. And to us, that seems long at times. But then we also have cricket games that go for 5 days with 8 hours of play on each day. But of course, not all cricket is like that, as you'd be well aware, Fletch. There are different types, but the idea of it, if anyone says to someone in America, you're going to watch cricket, oh man, how does a sport go for 5 days? That's the original form of the game. That's the way that it's played. It's the way that most, I guess, most Australians in my age group and older would prefer. But there are games that are shorter. Yeah, there are the 50-over games which go for quite a long time themselves, and they're an eight-hour extravaganza in themselves. But the newest form, that the T20, 2020 cricket, which goes for about 3 hours, it's right on par with American sports, with a little bit longer than a basketball game, shorter than baseball, shorter than American football as well. But it's getting over that that idea of this game being this long and tedious process. I think if, and I know there is, you know, cricket, there are cricket teams in America, but the ability for it to catch on is pretty limited. And I think the whole bowling aspect, the batting stuff, I think they could get that part sorted. The bowling aspect is going to be something that's going to be a long way coming. The sports market is already fairly saturated over in the United States, so it's really hard to see cricket ever making inroads over there. And I know there are issues with their governing body, the United States cricket. There's issues with competing bodies trying to be the number one governing body across the country, and infighting and all this sort of random bullshit that goes on over there. The United States are a fair way from being a competitive cricket nation. They need to start to become decent at it, in that realm of teams such as like Kenya, the Netherlands, United Arab Emirates, those teams who qualify at the back end of a World Cup. If America could get to that level, then a little bit of interest might start to get drawn up, because there's no doubt that, you know, over a couple of generations, they could develop into good players. But it just feels like it's almost an impossibility at this point, especially with the organizational structure that's going on with US cricket at the moment. Let's go into these games now. Let's try and break down some value, work out what we can get out of these games for our fantasy teams. There was only the 5 games on. There was 6 scheduled, because one of them, the New Orleans Pelicans and the Indiana Pacers game, had to be postponed. It looks like that game will be replayed in the first week of March. Around the 5th of March is what I'm seeing at the moment. There was a leak in the roof. They couldn't repair the roof. They tried to catch the water in some sort of trough thing. It didn't end up working, so it was a dangerous situation with water going onto the court. I know many DFS people are pissed and they're vowing to never play DFS again. This happens at least once a season. If a game is postponed, then if it's bad luck. That's pretty much how it works on those sites. It's in their terms and conditions. We've seen it happen multiple times. If a game is called off, if you've got players from that game, you just get zeros and there's nothing. That's just how the rules work. It is a really tricky and complicated situation. But that's just how the rules go. Sometimes that sort of weird shit just does go on, and that's what's happened here. It's obviously not ideal for teams trying to make season-long playoffs. If you've got players like Anthony Davis or Victor Oladipo, having that game taken away from this week and added to another week can be detrimental. But honestly, that's what it is. You don't want the players playing in an unsafe environment because the roof sprung a leak and there's water on the court and they slip and then Davis tears his groin off the bone, and then I don't think many people would be too happy with that. Let's talk about the first one, the Brooklyn Nets and the Pistons. The Nets stayed competitive mainly because of Jarrett Allen and Allen Crabbe. The Allen brothers, Spencer Dinwiddie, 36 minutes, 12, 4, and 11, another strong night. While D'Angelo Russell's minutes continue to go backwards, only 17 for D'Angelo, 4, 4, and 5. I would still hold him in a lot of cases, but it's the positive glow that I all thought that I had on Russell at the start of the season is nowhere near as bright, and it's not looking great as his minutes start to drift off. Jahlil Okafor, I never thought that he was in for a great year, and he has been shithouse again. 8 minutes, 4 fouls, 2 points. Surely no one still deals with him in 12, 14, or 16 team leagues. Surely not. Jumpin' Joe Harris hit another 4 triples, 18, 6, and 6. A strong game, but he is a realistic candidate to be traded given how much he could help teams. Damari Carroll had 14 and 12 with 4 assists. He plays much better in the power forward position the majority of the time because there was no Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, no Quincy Acey, or no Caris LeVert in this game. Carroll should be owned while Harris is just a short-term streamer. Onto the Pistons, Andre Drummond, man. Whoa, 17 and 27. I say it all the time. Centers against the Nets, they kill it, and we saw it again. 3 steals and 2 blocks for Drummo. It wasn't a good shooting night, but who cares when you're pulling in 27 rebounds. Blake had 25, 3, and 7 in 2 steals, and they're clearly coexisting very nicely. Stan Johnson, 39 minutes for Stan, 19 and 2, 3 steals and a 3. I think he's a 12-team league guy. Not sure he's a must-own 10-teamer, but he was definitely a guy in 12-team leagues. And weirdly, since Avery Bradley has been traded, Luke Kennard has seen fewer minutes. Before the Bradley trade, Van Gundy said, we want to play Kennard more. We want to give him 25 to 28 minutes a night. Well, since Bradley has gone, opening up a position in the rotation at Kennard's actual position. His minutes have gone down as Johnson and Bullock have taken the bulk of those. Kennard played 23 and had 8 points with 2 assists. He is not looking like he's going to be a 12-teamer. While Reggie Bullock had 9 and 2 with a triple in 34. Still a guy for 12-team leagues despite a subpar performance. Langston Galloway was the backup point guard over Dwight Bikes. 13 points with 3 triples. Looked pretty good out there. But still more of a streamer or deep league guy. While Tone Tolliver, and if you want to hear Tone Tolliver, he is on the Locked On Pistons podcast from yesterday. Go and listen to him. He sounds like an absolute ripper bloke. Go and have a listen to that. Wasn't his best game. 9 points with 2 triples. But those 2 triples, an elite 3-point streaming option is Tone Tolliver. The Houston Rockets and the Miami Heat. Jim Harden on a back-to-back was fantastic. 41-4-6 with 3 steals, while Chrissy Paul had 24-7-7. Super efficient, those two guys. They're a real problem. There was no Ryan Anderson, no Eric Gordon, no Trevor Ariza. So this is a huge win for the Rockets on the road, on a back-to-back with all those guys out. Marmute played 37, had 9 points with 3 steals, while PJ Tucker started at the other forward spot and had 3-5 in 41 minutes. It doesn't really matter how long Ariza, Anderson and Gordon are out. Neither Marmute or PJ Tucker are going to even sniff 12-team must-own value. We got 16 minutes out of Markel Brown. He did nothing. While Gerald Green had his 2 triples and 12 points in 26 minutes. Short-term points and threes guy, as I've said plenty of times. Capella 13 and 8 and 3 blocks. That's a good performance. On to the Heat, there was no Kelly Olynyk. The Duke Wayne Ellington was out with some shoulder issues as well. Everyone who was really getting onto the Bam Adebayo wagon, I did mention there was, you know, he should have a level of concern or a level of caution when looking at Bam. And in this game without Kelly Olynyk, Adebayo played only 15 minutes. Hassan Whiteside got more playing time and had 16 and 17 in 33, and Bam played exclusively as the backup center, didn't get any extra minutes. So the times that he gets these big nights, it's going to be because they limit what Whiteside can do, and that's not going to be every single game. Bam had 5-5-2 with 2 blocks. I think it's unlikely that Whiteside gets traded, therefore unlikely that Adebayo becomes a must-own 12-team guy. Only the 36 minutes for Jim Johnson this one. He has been a real disappointment. 9-2-3. In a 10-team league, I think he's gone. In a 12-teamer, I can understand cutting him, especially with the deadline tomorrow. Derek Jones Jr. reaffirmed his status as the worst fantasy player in the NBA. 3 points as a starter, while Justice Winslow had 5 in 25 minutes and only a real deeper league guy. But I need to talk about my mate, Joshy Richardson, 34-5, 7 triples, 1 steal, 1 block. Remember how bad he was to start the year? He is fantastic. He is the best player on this team. I know Goran Dragic is good, but Josh Richardson is the best player on this Heat team. I've been saying it all year. He is crushing it at the moment. That efficiency won't necessarily stay, but it doesn't matter because he can do many things in many areas. And of course, he is a must-own guy. Still only 73% owned on Yahoo, meaning that 27% of leagues, literally nobody pays any attention in those leagues. That has to be the reason, because there is no reason that Joshy Richardson, who is a comfortable top 50 player, in fact, let's have a look. I'm saying top 50 player off the top of my head. I probably should have a look before I make those pronouncements. Let's have a look at where Josh actually sits for the season. He's the 56th ranked player, my bad, for the year. And over the last week, the 21st ranked guy, 34th over the last 2 weeks, putting up some strong, strong numbers, contributing in multiple areas, just an elite fantasy talent for where you could have got him in a draft. And putting up huge, huge numbers. Really good stuff from Joshy, while Dragic had 30 points of his own with 6 assists and 2 triples. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Big score, overtime victory for the Cavs. Townsie, just still not enough shots. 12 shots is ridiculous. Didn't see the ball anywhere near enough at the end of the game. Had 30 and 10, hit 6 triples, a steal and 2 blocks, missed only 2 shots for the entire game, but that is bullshit coaching. The fact that he just did not touch it down the stretch is, and Tom Thibodeau made some just horrendous coaching mistakes. That's one of them. The defense on the inbound pass was ludicrous. The fact that you have LeBron single covered is just bananas on a pass from half court. It makes no sense at all. Just horrendous coaching there from Thibodeau. Townsie needs more shots. There's no way that Andrew Wiggins and Jamal Crawford should be taking more shots and Jeff Teague should be taking the same. That just should never happen. Butler was great, 35-5-6 with 4 triples, while Teague played 39 minutes. His minutes had been going in the complete opposite direction. Thibodeau reversed course and said, nah, let's go back to this. Teague was good, 14-3-15 against the Cavs. Point guards are expected to be good. Tyus Jones wasn't great, 5 assists with 2 steals in 14 minutes. Wigo, 19-2, was efficient, didn't do anything else, and that's always going to limit his fantasy value. On the Cavs, LeBron, 37, 10, and 15. Actually, we talked about LeBron already because he was the monstrous line of the night. Isaiah Thomas, better game from him, 31 minutes, 13, 3, and 7 with 3 triples. There is a distinct smell of shit blokeness emanating from Isaiah Thomas this season. We've heard it from him in other stops, definitely not in Boston. Boston people love him, absolutely love him. But there's some weird stuff that keeps continually happening. The Cavs fans were booing him on the court consistently. It's an incredibly weird scenario here in Cleveland for Thomas. Still should be owned. This is a better performance, but there's a chance he moves tomorrow, which will be a weird scenario. The plumber, J.R. Smith, 20 points with 6 triples. One of his, signature type games. Didn't do much else. Not someone you should be relying upon, but an interesting streamer, while Kyle Korver also hit 4 triples in his 19 minutes. Jay Crowder continues to be bad and is outplayed by Jeff Green again.
My name is Jeff.
29 minutes for Greeny, 13 and 6, while Crowder had 10 points in 24 minutes. While Tristan Thompson, a strong game from Tomo, 17 and 5 in 29 minutes. Still not someone that I'm overly interested in. Well, by not overly, I mean not interested in at all in standard leagues. Thomas was benched in this one down the stretch for Chetty Osman, who played 21 minutes. I like Osman a lot. 9 points with 2 triples and 4 rebounds. I could easily make the argument that he could be a better player than, or that he is a better player than Jay Crowder at the moment. And depending on what happens with this team, he could find himself in a decent role next season. I think he can do quite a lot of stuff. Maybe not ever going to be a top 100 guy. Maybe not even a top 150 guy. But deeper dynasties, expect a larger role from Chetty next season. No Dwayne Wade, so Derrick Rose played 7 minutes, remained bad. I tweeted this out today, and I know I say it a lot about Rose fans, but they are literally the craziest people I've ever met on Twitter, and this is a non-Nazi division. It is craziness, the stuff. There's one bloke in particular who, go and scroll through my tweets and have a look at me screenshotting some of his stuff, saying that Rose, he said Derrick Rose, this is a direct quote, Derrick Rose is still a top 3 on-ball defender in the NBA. You could have said he's a top 3 on-ball defender amongst the point guards for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I might have said maybe. Yep, he's better than Isaiah Thomas, fine. He is a top 3 on-ball defender, not point guard, not for his own team, top 3 on-ball defender in the entire NBA, and by claiming still means he used to be and he still is, and that was never the case. He is bad, he continues to be bad, and 24% of people own him in fantasy, which is 100% bonkers, makes no sense. Shout out to Derrick Rose fans. The Utah Jazz and the Memphis Grizzlies. Ravishing Rick Rubio does it again. 29 and 8, 3 assists and 3 steals, again on high shooting. When I talked about him yesterday, we highlighted just how high his shooting percentages were over the last couple of weeks, and numbers that are sure to come back down. Another 50% on threes, 50% from the field. It won't stick, but it's pretty bloody tasty when it is. Now, he played 29 minutes, Don Mitchell played 31, and Rocket Rodney Hood played 23 minutes. Is that the rotation they're going to go with in that backcourt? You just love what Rubio is doing. If you can sell him for a top 30 guy, I'd be happy to do it. But otherwise, I think you just take what you get being given. Rocket Rodney Hood had a Rocket Rodney Hood line, 18 points in 23 minutes, nothing else. That's what he does. While Gobert had 8 and 12, and Jingle and Joe had 7, 2 and 4. Another decent game from Royce O'Neal, but only the 15 minutes, 4 and 4. Like what he can do as a player, the role just isn't quite there for him this season. On to the Grizzlies. They went with a weird, weird starting lineup. Wayne Seldon moved to the bench, and they started Andy Harrison and Dylan Brooks as the backcourt, and then they had Jermichael Green, Jarrell Martin, and Marc Gasol. So two power forwards and a center manning the front court there. A weird mix of guys. Andy Harrison went off 23-1-4, 2 steals and 2 blocks. I think he's going to be the starting point guard the remainder of the season, and I think that can be a 12-team league guy. Been super impressed with how he's been able to further his game this year. Gasol had 26-5 with 3 blocks, while Dylan Brooks got ejected in the last second, and JB Bickerstaff got ejected as well. 11-6 with 3 steals for Brooksy, more a 14-team league guy. As for Seldon, the opportunities there's no Tyreek, and he has been shit pretty much every game. If you own him in a 12-team league, maybe you hold for tomorrow, but he should be the number one guy that you're ready to drop to go and add someone else. He's just not that good. It's pretty simple. Jarrell Martin had 6-5 in 31, while Jermichael had 11-7 in 30. I'm not sure how often we're going to see the Martin, Green, Gasol starting front court. I'm not adding Martin or Green in 12s. Green is a 14-team leaguer, while Martin is like a 16 to 18-team league sort of a player. The last game of the night, the San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns, just an absolute laugher of a game. The Spurs won this one by almost 50 points. The big news on the Spurs side is DeJounte Murray sprained his ankle. It doesn't appear too serious, but Greg Popovich didn't give a timetable for him to return, so I'd assume that he misses a game or two. He had 14, 4, and 3 in 13 minutes and was looking to put together a big performance. Now, before we all start to go, do I rush to add Tony Parker? Remember, at the start of the season, or the middle of the season, Parker was the starting point guard. Pat Mills was the backup, and DeJounte Murray was out of the rotation, and neither Mills or Parker were must-own players at that time, and that will be exactly the same scenario here. So don't rush to grab him, or rush to grab Bryn Forbes, or rush to grab Pat Mills. Even though Mills was strong here, he had 18 with 5 triples in 17 minutes. Davis Bertans started again over Pau Gasol. I'm still holding Pau. I'm not rushing to grab Bertans. He had 9 and 6 Davis in his 26 minutes, but it's interesting to see how that pans out, and Bertans, like Tone Tolliver, is an interesting big man three-point streamer. Onto the Suns, Jesus. This was bad. No Devin Booker again. No Tyson Chandler, who apparently now is going to start playing back-to-backs. For what reason? Everyone, oh man, they're going to start ramping down Tyson Chandler's minutes. The Suns go, what are you talking about? We're going to play more. Screw you guys. He's going to play more minutes. So he's going to play back-to-backs now. Apparently had a sore neck, so sat this one out. They didn't start Alex Len, so your Alex Len must-own, must-grab stash value is absolutely in the toilet. In a game without Tyson Chandler and no other centers, he played 18 minutes. Now, I think Alex Len can be a decent player. The Suns don't. He had 14 and 5 with a steal and a block. Good numbers, but 18 minutes in a game without Chandler is a really big red flag. Dragan Bender started at center, 12 and 6 with 2 triples. Maybe if Chandler gets bought out at some point, then yeah, you could, and I don't think that'll happen, but you could look at Bender, but he's not a 12-team league guy. While Chris had 7 and 10 with a steal. I think Marquise goes back to the bench in the next game, while Bender remains as the starting power forward, and there will be other guys that I prefer over Marquise as standard league players. Tyler Euler suffered back spasms. He was out after 9 minutes. So Joshie Gray played 31 and had 9, 4 and 7 with 4 steals. If Booker remains out and if Euler misses time, then Green is going to be an interesting short-term stream, but you don't stream them now because of that trade deadline. Let's wait and see what happens. But a good performance from Joshie Gray there to put up those numbers, and definitely a name to watch. He's been really solid in his per-minute performances since arriving on the team. That's all of the action from whatever day it was, from Wednesday's games. I'm going to be back with that player spotlight for Bradley Beal, and then we're going to talk some DFS action for Thursday's games. I'm going to play a song by Jake McKelvey and the Countertops, and then we'll be back to get into those things that I just mentioned.
Lots of money. I go where the shuttle takes me. So we're heading for the sun. We are better off this time. We are better off this time. We are better off this time. Around. So she doesn't know me by my name. So I will sleep 100 years. I am not quite the tired man that I was when I wept here. Finally I will not shiver when my suit to you just shimmers.
We're back. Let's go player spotlighting, and we're going to be heading to the Washington Wizards to talk about Bradley Beal, their all-star for the first time. He has been sensational this season, the 27th ranked player in 36 minutes a night, which is a scary number for a bloke with the injury history that Beal's got. Has been. I don't think he's ever missed a game this year. No, he's played every game this year, so that's fantastic, but to still have that worry. 24 points per game, 2.5 threes, 4.5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.2 steals, half a block. An underrated half a block as well. 47 from the field and 79 from the free throw line, shooting 37% from three. So he has elevated his game from last season. He's scoring more points. Now, his three-point output is down from 2.9 to 2.4, but what he has done to supplement that is increase those blocks, but increase the assists up half an assist a game, increase the rebounds up 1.4 extra rebounds per game, and he has got scope to get better than this because his overall efficiency is down on the year. He was a 60% true shooting guy last year, 57 for this season. But if we look over the last 2 weeks, this is the upside that Beal has. 25 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 2.7 triples, 1.4 steals on 51 and 83, shooting 41% from 3. Obviously, elite numbers there for Brad Beal, who is playing a lot more point guard recently with John Wall out and, you know, doing some, honestly, some fantastic stuff and providing great value for your fantasy team. As for Beal's upside, what is his upside? Will the Wizards ever break up this Wall-Beal combo? Will a team ever say we're going to run with Brad as our starting point guard? I think this little audition he's getting now shows that he can do that. He has got, you know, all the advanced stats, you know, are really good in his favor. You know, strong PER numbers, you know, around 20 the last two seasons. Box score plus minus stuff looks good. His on-off is sensational. He's at over plus 21 combined over the last two seasons. So an average of, you know, 10.5 per season for those last 2 years. But he has increased his point guard time this year, playing 20%. And that would make him a really interesting guy that if they trade Wall away, which again, there's some weird stuff happening there in the locker room, or if Beal ends up going, or whatever happens, he could be a player who I think would have at least one or two top 15 seasons. Now, playing with Wall, I think that will limit him, and maybe he could be a top 20 guy. I think he's got at least 3 years of top 30 value in him. But if he went to a team where he was that starting point guard, he could average 25s, 5 and 6. I think he could average that and comfortably be a top 20 player. Whether that opportunity arises remains to be seen, but it is the upside for Beal, and I think he's got a fairly safe floor. Again, this has been a down shooting year for him, so even though he's improved in many areas, he could still be better and still could be the 22nd or 23rd guy this year with upside to up his assists by, you know, another 2 per game if he finds himself in a different role. And he could very easily come to that level by the end of this year with Wall injured as he is. So really love what Beal has done this year. We hope that he can stay healthy and can continue to put up these numbers. It's been super impressive from him so far. Let's go to the perfect lineups for DFS on FanDuel. Andy Harrison, 40.2, and Joshy Gray, 35.3. Shout out if you had Josh Gray in your lineup. Jimmy Harden, 62.8, and The Plumber had 25.1. Joshy Richardson, 47.3, and LeBron, 72.5. Jeff Green, 21.2, LaMarcus Aldridge, 50.6, and Jarrett Allen, 46.8, for a total of 401.8, and that cost $59,500. If we go on to DraftKings, it's Jeff Teague at 44.25.
My name is Jeff.
Jumpin' Joe Harris at 33.25. The Blue Swimmer, 41.75. And Jarrett Allen at 46.5. Drummo had 66.75. Joshy Richardson had 49.5. LeBronald had 80.5. And Joshy Gray had 32 for a total of 394.5. And that cost $49,200. Let's get into these games. There are 6 of them, but I'm going to throw out a massive, massive disclaimer. The trade deadline is going to pass before these games are played. If you are not in a position to set your lineups later in the day, don't play, because lots of stuff is going to change. The players that get traded won't play. So you're going, say we get 30 players traded and 15 of them play on this day. Those guys won't play, so there's going to be weird opportunities opening up. But if you're switched on, if you're watching, and if you're a Basketball Monster subscriber, all that stuff will be updated and you will see tons of value appear. But if you're not ready to and willing to be plugged in to understand how things are going to change with guys sitting out, having rotation roles moved, and guys having one game bumps, which is really going to be interesting with their salaries, you're going to have a high scoring night and you're going to get your pants pulled down and someone's going to really smack your ass hard with a cricket bat. You need to be locked in today. It's a weird day. Plenty of stuff is going to change from what I say here. I'm saying things assuming no one gets traded, so that's not going to be the case. Make sure you are checking in with Basketball Monster with our projections so you can see how all this stuff changes when these trades are actually finalized. The first game we look at is the Atlanta Hawks and the Orlando Magic. Nick Vucevic is questionable. So he is back. That is he's close to back. That's fantastic. John Simmons is questionable with an ankle injury after his big game against the Cavs. For the Hawks, DeAndre Bembry and Tyler Cavanaugh are both questionable. They're not an impact guys. Unless Marco Bellinelli or Ohsan Ilyasova or Dewayne Dedman or multiple guys get traded and then they are healthy and they're forced into action, then roles could appear for them. Bellinelli's not going to play regardless. I think that it's going to be Tyler Dorsey that gets those minutes. Speaking of Dorsey, he's at 3,900. He had 28 in that last game without Bellinelli. I'm in on him for cash at this point. Other value options may open, but this is the sort of value that's going to open in other spots when players are traded. A $3,900 guy who can play 30 minutes and drop 30 points, that is where the value is. Don't be shocked if you see high scores being 480, even on a six-game slate. There's a potential, maybe 480 is too high, maybe looking at 440. There is a potential for it though. Dennis Schroeder at 7,500. I think he is a fairly safe play for cash with a brilliant matchup. This is, it's almost a lock in for 35 or 36. And you're with 45 upside. Love Schroeder here in this spot. You've got Shelvin Mack, DJ Augustine, Alfred Payton, and Malcolm Delaney as the other point guards. Lord Alfred Payton has got a decent spot here as well against Atlanta at 6,700. He's interesting. Not the best play, but interesting. While Augustine and Mack for the Magic, they get tournament boosts if John Simmons is out, because they'll play a lot more two-point guard lineups in that scenario. Malcolm Delaney should get a little bit of a bump as well at minimum salary with Bellinelli not ready to go or not playing, and Isaiah Taylor also in your tournament pool. At shooting guard, Fournier's at 6,200. I like the tournament upside there, especially if Simmons is out. Well, Kenty Bazemore at 64. That's probably just a little bit too high for Bay, so I think that's fade territory. Small forward, the artist, formerly known as Torian Prince, is at 4,500. That is not a high dollar amount. I am absolutely fine with using Prince in this matchup. Definitely get on that. While Mario Hezonja at 5,400, as Gordon is out, Hezonja will start 5,400. I think that is a strong, strong cash play with upside there as well. Simone's at 58. I think I'd fade him with the injury especially. And Wes Iwundu at minimum salary. Yeah, maybe you could look at Wes as a tournament guy if Simo is ruled out, because he would likely be the starter and could see 25 minutes, but he hasn't really done too much this season. In fact, his highest score is just 28 points, which if you got 28, you'd be pretty happy, but it's not a likelihood. At power forward, Ilyasova's at 4,500. I don't really feel excited there. The Baptist at 52. I think it's worth considering him a tournament guy. Dropped 30 in the last game, John Collins. So I think he is worth paying some attention to. No other power forwards on the market. At center, Nick Vucevic, 8,200. I wouldn't be using him in his first game back. The matchup is brilliant. So maybe in a tournament. He averages 58 against the Hawks. That is a huge average for a guy like Vuce. But just coming back after that broken hand, I think I'd be a little bit cautious about using him. While the Undertaker's at 49, not really feeling much there. And Biyombo, of course, loses a ton of value if Vuce is actually back in action, which looks like there's a decent shot of it. On DraftKings, I like Schroeder at 73. That's a strong cash play. Great matchup. While Vuce comes in as a very interesting play on DraftKings, he's at 7,000. So if he is ready to go, I think that that is actually worth using. Tournaments mainly, but there is some clear upside. He averages actually 59 on DraftKings over the last three. So even better. And that is a great, great price for him if he was healthy, which we don't know. The Baptist at 48, a tournament guy. The artist, formerly known as Torian Prince at 49, is an interesting one. Probably more tournament on DraftKings, whereas I can look at him as cash on FanDuel. Tyler Dorsey at 35, I'm in on for cash. And Shelvin Mack and Augustine, like FanDuel, they are some tournament GPP type options. All right, let's go to the next one. We've got the New York Knicks and the Toronto Raptors, the Landry Fields Bowl. No spread currently out for this game. We know Porzingis is out. We know Bill Hernangómez is out for the Knicks. Expect Mick Beasley and Enes Kanter to man that front court at point guard. The report actually came out today, and this is something that you always, Ian Begley tweeted out, and Begley's a great reporter, really reliable stuff, said that the Knicks are going to be looking to put more minutes into their younger players after the Porzingis injury. 2 hours later, traded their second-year center. So I don't know which one of them it is. I don't know if Begley is spouting a company line and then they're not going to do it. I don't know. It could mean more minutes for Ntilikina. It could mean more minutes for Trey Burke. Not that he's all that young, but there are other young players. There's no one really else around. Maybe Damian Dotson gets minutes over Courtney Lee, but the direction of that trade definitely didn't indicate that that's what they'd be going to do by trading away a second-year center. Point guard, Wright, 4,400. He's playing really well at the moment. DeLon, I'm not all that interested. It's a good matchup for him, and it's got massive blowout potential, so that could give DeLon some extra playing time, tournaments only. Same you'd say with Freddie VanVleet at 49, who's playing really well, but the opportunity needs to be there. Jarrett Jack at 4,000, no interest. Trey Burke at 36. Yeah, I could see Trey Burke as a tournament option. Well, Nila Kina at minimum salary, I don't want anything to do with that until I actually see it in action. At small forward, Mick Beasley here. We'll do that in a sec. Shooting guard, DeMar, 8,400. I think this is a fade for DeRozan. He hasn't done well against the Knicks in the past. It's been okay, but nothing spectacular. There are better options out there than DeRozan at that price. But if you've got 8,000 left and you're looking to fill a spot, here's a bloke that can give you 37 or 38. Maybe that's what you need. Not interested, though. Timmy Hardaway's 6,000. Been shithouse lately, but played well against the Raptors in his last few games. I think there is definitely some tournament value, but I'm not looking to use him in cash. Courtney Lee at 51. Nope. Small forward Beasley. Here we go. 6,200 for Mick. I am in on this. He's had a 51-point game already this season. He can sport a 30% usage on decent efficiency in 30 minutes is what he's done in the starts that Porzingis has been out already. I'm totally in on using him here. CJ Miles and the Jedi OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
Don't think we really need to be too interested in them. Serge Ibaka at 5,000 has been terrible. 18-point average over his last five, but I think this is a good spot for him, and I think he can put up the numbers. Siakam at 4,000, nope. And a couple of guys who might get some playing time, Isaiah Hicks and Luke Kornet as a backup role with... the other thing I forgot to mention... Enes Kanter's out in this game. I said it earlier, he was playing. No, he is out. He's having oral surgery, so he is out. So they are down a lot in that front court. No Noah, no Kanter, no Porzingis. So guys like Isaiah Hicks and Luke Kornet, maybe you throw him into a tournament. Haven't played at all this season, but there could be something weird. I'd go Hicks over Kornet if I was choosing one of them. At center, Cock, $4,000. That is the chalkiest cash play there is. That is going to be in every lineup. I think you need to definitely lock your Cock in. Jakob Poeltl at 39, tournament value there, while Jonas Valanciunas at 66. Don't feel comfortable with him at that salary, just a little bit too high. Beasley and Cock is going to be a massive pairing in cash games, I'm pretty confident. On DraftKings, Beasley's at 63, Cock's at 44, a little bit higher prices, but I don't really care. They're still value guys, while Valanciunas comes in cheaper, 5,700, and that is a quality tournament option. Lowry's at 81, has torched the Knicks in the past. I don't even know if I mentioned Lowry before with FanDuel. I like him on FanDuel, and I think he's a pretty decent spot on DraftKings as well. Let's move on to the next game. We have got the Celtics and the Wizards, the funeral game. The Wizards are favored by 2. The total is 206 points. Greg Monro has been upgraded to probable, so maybe we see Greggy finally running in.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
That's going to impact guys like Vanilla Tice, Aaron Baines, Marcus Morris. Kyrie Irving is going to be on a minutes restriction as well, so that's going to give a slight boost to Terry Rozier. Now, Irving's at $8,000. Hard on a minutes restriction to go there, while Rozier's at $6,500. I think that's just a little bit too expensive, just not knowing how those minutes are going to play out. Timmy Frazier, no for the Wizards, while Tomas Satoransky at 47. With more minutes going to Beal at point guard and more Oubre wing playing time, hard to use Satoransky at that price. Beal at 86, let's go, putting up some good numbers. It is a little bit of a worry matchup for him, but with Smart out, I feel a bit more confident. I like using him, while Jaylen's at 5,500. Jaylen Brown has not been performing fantastically, but I do like the opportunity, and I'm ready to go with him back in cash as well. At small forward, Otto Porter's at 67, fade. Jason Tatum at 54 has been not good. 4 points in his last game, but I like that price for Tatum. I'd be happy to go back to him. While Kelly Oubre at 47, getting some more minutes, hasn't quite been exactly where he needs to be. I think he is definitely an upside tournament guy that you can use. At power forward, Markieff's at 63. I love that for cash. I think that's strong 30-point value there for Morris. Mike Scott, Marcus Morris, his brother clearly. I think there's a little bit of Marcus Morris upside, but nothing I'm getting super excited about. At center, Bainesy, Horford, Mahinmi, Gortat. Maybe Yarn at 3,700, who's outplayed Gortat in the last two games. Not really sexy though. Well, Al Horford at 7,400. I think there are better options out there at your center position. On DraftKings, I like Beal at 86 again. Markeith at 6,000 is strong. Jalen and Oubre are tournament guys at 56 and 45 respectively. Same problem we run into with Rozier, although at 5,900, definitely a lot more appealing than what he may seem over on FanDuel, so he has some tournament upside there. While it's hard to use Irving at with his minutes restriction, but at 7,900, you could absolutely throw him into a tournament in case he blows through that restriction and puts up a 45er, which is not a crazy thought. I wouldn't have thought anyway. The next game, the Hornets and the Trail Blazers. The Blazers are favored by 3. The total is 213.5. Evan Turner's missed the last couple with a calf injury. He is questionable again. Mo Harkless will get the start if Turner is out. He had one good game and one bad game. In fact,
sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep, actually more often than not is shit. Don't think we're really too caring there. Shabazz Napier at 3,600. Decent game in the last one, but really just a tournament guy in case Evan Turner is out. Lillard at 9,200, I'm in on in cash. While Kemba at 8,300, I think it's a little bit too high for Kemba, so I'd end up fading him. At shooting guard, McCollum's at 6,900. The matchup, shooting guards have been a real problem against Charlotte all season. I still like McCollum here. Given just the dearth of talent at that position, it is nice to go with him, but I'm not locking him as an absolute 100% must-play type of guy. Batum at 67, I'd take McCollum over Batum at that similar price every day. At small forward, Kid Gilchrist, no. Evan Turner, no. Jez Lamb, 49. It looks some decent numbers from Lamb lately, but that's a no from me there as well. While at power forward, the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
I like him for tournaments here. He's at 5,500. He's got the 35-point upside, got the 18-point floor. That's why he's a tournament guy. Eddie Davis, no. Marvin Williams is back. He's at 4,400, and I have no interest in that either. At center, Dwight, 8,200. Like Dwight a lot here. This is looking like a 40-pointer, assuming he's not traded. I don't think he will be. I like Dwight a lot there. Well, Nurkic at 6,500. I think that's fade territory going up against Howard. Zeller or Zachy Collins. Things could change, but pretty unlikely, I would guess. On DraftKings, Lillard at 9,000 and McCollum at 68 are both cash guys. I like Dwight at 83, and that's really about all I'm looking at there. Aminu's still a tournament-y type of guy, but nothing really stands out as being too different from what we're seeing over on FanDuel for the DraftKings value. The next game, the Mavs and the Warriors, not an appealing DFS game at all. Kevin Durant is questionable. Draymond with a hand contusion. Draymond had some dental work. He's probable. Shawnee Livingston is probable. David West is probable. And on the Mavs, the pencil Harrison Barnes is questionable. If Durant is out, we could look at Omri Caspi or Andre Iguodala as GPP guys. If Harrison Barnes is out, we look more to Wes Matthews in cash. We look more at maybe a bit more solid of a role for Dwight Powell and for Yogi Ferrell as tournament option for Ferrell there. At point guard, Steph's at 9'8". Totally fine with using him. We know how good Steph is. He was poor the last couple. I think a bounce-back game is a possibility, especially going up against Dennis Smith. Smith is at 6,500. I don't really like that on FanDuel. It's an okay matchup for him, but I'm not really feeling him. There'll be other sites where he's in a better spot, but not here. Barea and Livingston, no. At shooting guard, Clay's at 65, no interest. Wes Matthews at 58, I am interested, especially if the pencil's out. If Barnes is gone, then I am in on Matthews here as a cash guy. Devin Harris, Uncle P, and Pat McCaw, very little to see there. Andre Iguodala is at 3,900 because he has been bad this year. But if Durant is out, he would absolutely be worth throwing into a tournament and have a low ownership upside percentage or chance. Barnesy, the pencil, $6,000. Good price. He's come down quite a bit. He hasn't done that well against the Warriors in the past. I don't really love his upside. I'm not that keen there. Well, Durant at 10-5, I'm absolutely fine if he plays. Love it. Draymond at 83, I think I'll fade. Dave West, Dwight Powell, Dirk. Dwight Powell at 5,500 is too high. The matchup's not bad. He has had good games against the Warriors in the past, but I just think that salary precludes me from rostering him. At center, Zaza's at 39 and Mejri's at 36. Could there be a less inspiring center duo? Over on DraftKings, I like Durant and Curry, 10,000 and 9,900 for those guys respectively. While Dwight Powell in a much better spot, 4,500. I actually like that. I think there's tournament value in him. Not much else really happening in this game. Just really could get ugly from a DFS point of view with some blowout things actually going on. The Thunder and the Lakers, the last game of the night. Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony are both questionable. If Melo is out, Jeremy Grant steps in and would become an option. If Westbrook is out, Fatface Ray Felton steps in and he absolutely becomes an option. So there could be some real value there. And if we don't know about those two guys, putting them, Felton and Grant, into tournaments could be a huge, huge boon for you. If Westbrook plays at 12-1, I think he's more of a tournament guy just because that price is so high. But if you can fit him into cash, fine. I would focus more tournaments there for him. We know that Lonzo Ball is out already. Felton's at minimum salary, only of use if Westbrook is out. At shooting guard, Caldwell Pope's at 47, tournaments only for him. Josh the Hitman Hart, 6,300 FanDuel's price amount because he's been bloody good. But I don't feel super confident in him exceeding that value, so that takes him out of tournaments, and I don't feel confident about him actually getting to 27. I know his numbers have been really good lately, but that just feels too high. Brinez could get an extra role if Westbrook is out, but at $4,000, I don't really like it. Alex Caruso, Terry Ferguson, no. At small forward, Paulie George at 86, absolutely fine. I think that's cash, it's tournament, it goes up if Mello and Russ are both out. He could put up a big scoring game with poor efficiency, but could be good. Well, I like Brandon Ingram quite a bit as well. $7,100 has been crushing it as the point guard. He's going to have that role again, so I think that's a good spot to look at him. Mello's at 6,000, I don't care for that. Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, is at 4,700, has been down, averaging under 15 over his last five, but I think that he is an upside guy here for tournaments, so definitely look towards him there. Well, Larry Nance at 42, I don't care for that. At center, we've got a few guys that I am interested in. Julius Randle's at 7-3. Playing well, Julius. Sorry, mate, against Steve Adams, that is too high. Speaking of Steve-O, 6,900. I like the matchup for Steve. I am in there. While Brook Lopez, I don't know where the minutes are going to land. He's at 53, but that makes him a tournament upside with 30-point potential. Has done well against the Thunder in the past, averaging 33 in just 22 minutes, which is obviously a really strong return. On DraftKings, I like Westbrook at 11-9 if he plays. George obviously gets that boost. Not much else. You know, Randall's more appealing on DraftKings than he is on FanDuel. Steve-O Adams is a decently strong play. Ingram at 65 is also in a pretty interesting spot. And Joshy Hart at 55, the Hitman. I could get behind using him just because of that salary discrepancy. Over on Yahoo for tournaments, I like Ibaka, I like Brook Lopez, Kelly Oubre, Freddie Van Vliet, DeLon Wright, Shelvin Mack, Marcus Morris, Jeremy Grant, Shabazz Napier, Yan Mahinmi, Cody Zeller, and Trey Burke. And for tournaments and cash, Augustine, Tyler Dorsey, Marvin Williams, David West, Joshy Hart, Dwight Powell, Mario Hezonja, Kent Bazemore, Koch, Mike Beasley, DeMar DeRozan, Brad Beal, and Damian Lillard. On Moneyball, we're looking at tournament options. Jaylen Brown, the Chief Al-Farouq Aminu, the Baptist, DeLon Wright, Shabazz Napier, and for tournaments and cash, I've got Tyler Dorsey, the future MVP, Mario Hezonja, Serge Ibaka, Yusuf Nurkic, Koch, Beasley, McCollum, Schroeder, Kyle Lowry, Lillard, and Curry. And the last site we're looking at draft stars for tournaments, Porter, Dennis Smith, Valanciunas, Bazemore, the Chief, Shabazz Napier, Yan Mahinmi, and Alex Abrines. And for cash, we've got Tyler Dorsey, Mario Hezonja, Ibaka, Markeith, Evan Fournier, Koch, Beasley, McCollum, Schroeder, Dwight, DeMar DeRozan, and Steph Curry. That wraps things up for today's show. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. It's a great way to support the podcast. And if you've got a spare 2 minutes, go and do it. It does really help out the show a lot. Remember, tomorrow on Periscope, myself, Greg Ehrenberg, and various special guests will be doing a live trade deadline show starting at 2 p.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Melbourne time, covering all the news and what moves you need to make in your fantasy leagues to take full advantage of this trade deadline. You can find this show also on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can subscribe and give me a thumbs up and leave your comments there. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dell Demps.